Hello and welcome along to the On the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Zain Nabi. We bring you the latest news, interviews, and analysis on African football. We are African football's biggest braai. And joining me today, a man who needs no introduction, Lawrence Culler, our friends of the show, African football expert, a man who travels to all the major events. He was at the Ivory Coast recently, but now is back in Johannesburg working for the iDisky Times. Lawrence, how are you doing, brother?
I'm good. And you forgot to mention that you're featuring my aesthetically pleasing wall behind me here. Yeah, I'm very good. Honestly, it's been a bit hectic since coming home because, you know, and after AFCON now the domestic scene and the continental scene is like it's jam-packed, and then boom, you're back into international football. So yeah, we're hardly getting space to breathe now. But I mean, yeah, that's part of the job.
You must be earning a lot of rands, dollars, or pounds because that wall behind you looks phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a rental. But soon I'll in the next month I'll be into my own place, and then I'm sure I'll try and get one of these installed in the house as well because it looks quite good for the pod. It's
like
a good
feature,
addition
it
to
looks
the
like a
pod.
feature wall, you know.
Yeah.
I tell you why I'm laughing, because I saw this comedian, Zambian comedian on social media, on Instagram. I've forgotten his name. And he said, you know, whenever we like in the UK or wherever in Johannesburg and we post these pictures of our new clothes or our new house or whatever, we want to very quickly say, oh, no, I got this on sale and at the bargain. Oh, no, I'm renting. It's not mine.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Otherwise, you never know who's going to be coming asking for a loan, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
But listen, Lawrence, honestly, it's a pleasure to have you on. We've got so much to get into. There have been a bunch of changes in the world of international coaching on the continent. And of course, we now know the quarterfinalists for the CAF Champions League. So there's some wonderful talkers to get going on. I think for me, probably the best place to start is in Nigeria. Jose Pesero, he led the Super Eagles to the final of in the Ivory Coast, which they ended up losing. They took the silver medal. Of course, I think William Troostekong taking play of the tournament. So, you know, Nigeria had done pretty well. Given how well the team had done, I think he was into his second year. Would you have liked to have seen him stay on with the Super Eagles and see if it could qualify them for the United States? Or do you think there was just a very natural ending to this chapter in Nigeria?
Me personally, I would have liked to seen him stay because he's in the same group as Bafana for the World Cup qualifiers. So I'd like him to see him stay because I don't think he's been doing a very good job with that phenomenal Nigerian team. But obviously, if I need to be neutral and unbiased, obviously, I think he needed to go. He's had his issues with the NFF, like non-payment, late payment, and things like that. But he stuck it out. And he, you know, he did his best. But I just think for the squad that the Super Eagles have, if you look at them on paper, you know, Calvin Bassey, Ikong, Onyeka, Iwobi, they've got a forward line that, you know, some of the European giants could be envious of. And it just looks like every time you go on social media or Google, some new Nigerian wonder kid striker is popping up. So, you know, it's a squad that's brimming with talent, future talent as well. And I just think that perhaps, you know, even if they had a local coach or somebody like, you know, more in tuned with African football.
Well, that's the question. Is there a local coach or former Nigerian player who could step into the role? Like, you've got phenomenal talent like Victor Osimhen heading up that attacking line.
Yeah, look for a local coach, you know, you can trust them. They can maybe, you know, win AFCON because they understand the intricacies and the shenanigans behind African football. Not that there was a lot of that in Ivory Coast, but I just feel that, you know, there is a preference towards, I mean, look at MSFI, he's an intern and he leads them to the title. Just that it's this extra bit of, I don't know, passion. know what I mean, for to get that extra bit of motivation out of players. But obviously football's not about motivation. It's about, modern trends, tactics, good technical stuff, good technology, things like that, blah blah blah. But yeah, like when I talk about local coaches and understanding African football, it's like, for example, just because a player is at West Bromwich Albion, like Semi Ajayi, right, doesn't mean that he's better than, let's say, Olisa Ndah at Orlando Pirates, or like, yes, Stanley Nwabali is now a prime example. He's playing for Chippa. I mean, come on.
He had a phenomenal AFCON in goals, right?
Exactly. So what that tells you, that Olisa Ndah, in my opinion, is one of the top five players in the PSL, hands down. He could have easily slotted into that defense, comfortable with both feet, very good defender. He's tall, he's dominant in the air. But anyway, I'm deviating from the actual question, which is Peseiro. Look, it depends obviously who they're gonna get. It's very short notice. But the funny thing is that when Nigeria and South Africa meet again in March, not March, June, in Uyo, I think it's in Uyo, we're probably both gonna have new head coaches. I think Brewers and Peseiro will
Well,
both.
wait, you think Hugo Bruce is going to move on from this project in South Africa? That may make for a nice follow-up straight off the back of this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I asked him 3 or 4 times because he just feels, look, behind the scenes, we know that it's not all sunshine and roses and things like that. He misses his family. I mean, he's 71, 72. There's a lot of issues between the PSL and SAFA. It's long-standing. It's not nothing new. But obviously, he feels without that cohesion between the league and the federation, there's a lot of, nonsense that is holding our football back. For example, not being able to call the league off maybe 2 weeks before AFCON. You know what I mean? Like, Sundowns players played and then they had like 2 or 3 days rest and then they were in camp again for AFCON. It's ridiculous. So that type of relationship is, he feels, is strained. And also, he doesn't get much support. Like, he's done a phenomenal job. And sections of the media, section of the fan base, even people at SAFA are criticizing him of his squad selection and things like that. So there's a variety of things that is getting under his skin. And to my knowledge, he sent a couple of CVs, or well, his representative sent the CVs
Wow. Is this
to his.
relatively well known in the South African media, Lawrence?
Not really. It's like, I would say, unconfirmed chats, where people talk, where apparently he put his name, well, his agent put his name in the ad for the Algeria and the Tunisia jobs. But obviously he would require substantial buyout fee because he's still contracted until 2026 with SAFA. So that
I have to ask you, why would those projects be more exciting with what he's doing with Bafana?
I think it's a 2-hour flight to Belgium from North Africa. So
So surely
obviously,
through proximity to Europe.
yeah, and maybe because Algeria and Tunisia on paper have better players. And I feel like that is an easier route to the World Cup, if we're being honest with ourselves. That's a project you can come in there. You don't need to, like say, oh, I'm gonna rebuild. You can go in there and you can pick and choose 23 out of a national team pool of maybe 200, 300 players. You know what I mean? Where South Africa, you like still need to scout and very limited resources in terms of technical team, very limited budget. I mean, for example, I think it looked like the technical staff of Tunisia was bigger than our actual squad when we were at AFCON. And then Algeria, like, okay, they did poorly, but like, the intricacies that they have in preparing for AFCON, they have their own chef, dietitians, they have like a team of masseurs, they stayed in a hotel that was about a less than a minute drive to their home, to their stadium in Bouake. It's crazy. They brought their own food. That type of budget where you have the actual support, where your team must just go out there and get the results. Okay, they didn't get the results, but You know what I mean? It's good to have those things. But yeah, so there's a variety of things that maybe he's not happy about. And then obviously with Club Brugge coming in, he stays about 5 6 minutes away from the stadium. And they've spoken to him about the technical director role. And I mean, that's right up his alley. 4 league titles there as a player, 3 as a coach. He lives right there. I mean, it would be a good retirement package job, if you know what I mean. So why deal with all this
Bruges is a pretty cool
nonsense?
city to live in.
So why deal with all this nonsense? Because many people know, he's not living in South Africa. He comes here for a couple of months, he leaves. He comes here a couple of months, he leaves. So yeah, it will be interesting to see whether he does in fact get his contract bought out, or if he resigns, or if they force him to stay. I don't think they can offer him more money, but we'll see.
Well, listen, they started off talking about Jose Peseiro, and now it's gone on very wonderfully, Hugo Bruce and his future. If he was to step away, who has been groomed to take over? In my head, I naturally go Ronnie Mokwena. He's doing wonderful things at Sundowns, but it feels like he's so engaged in that project, he probably wouldn't want the job. Pitso Mosimane has been there. He's done that, albeit not. We all remember the famous qualification gaffe, but I mean, he's an incredibly talented coach. I'll throw out a left field one, Bradley Connell in the MLS, who's done some amazing work with the expansion team in St. Louis. Who, in your opinion, would now be the natural successor should Bruce step away?
Oh, that's a tough one, right? Because you use a very key word there, groom. Who is groom? Nobody is groomed for this role. And you know, there's a couple of boxes you need to tick to get this job right now. One, you need to be within the budget. Okay, Bruce is not on a small salary or anything, but you need to be within the budget.
What
You
kind of
need
salary
to
would he be on? Do you know the figures in US dollars or rands? So I can try to.
I'll have to research it again, but it shouldn't be lower than 50,000 US per month.
So it's a
It's
good wage. He's on about 600,000 US for the year,
it's
which
if
by
not
African
more.
standards is big money.
Yeah, if not more. I think it could be more. I'm not 100% certain. So forgive me if those figures are wrong. But anyway, you need to be within that bracket. You need to accept that you're not gonna have the world-class technical team that that other nations may have an advantage to. You need to accept that there is going to be some issues behind the scenes, sometimes bonus rows, which all African countries are going through at the moment. I mean, it's nothing new. But Rulani Mokoena, would he leave the Sundowns project for Bafana, where it's uncertain which direction it's going into? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, right now you could say, okay, we're on the rise as a nation because we came third at AFCON. But realistically, you know, the names that, to my, if I had to be a betting man, I would say Morena Ramabarele, who was at Jwaneng Galaxy, because he's in the system there. I don't think Almond will get a full-time job. Like, he doesn't have the badges for it. And quite frankly, I don't think he'd be interested in being the full-time coach right now. And then Benny. Pitso
Wow.
is Pits. Wait,
Can we
wait, Pit.
pry Benny away from United first team? That's why I didn't even put him in the mix. Only if Ten Hag goes, right?
But no, wait. Okay, just before I go to Benny, Pitso out of the question. Can't afford him.
Okay.
Comes he comes with his lieutenants and all that things. But I mean, that is also a discussion of if you can't afford him as SAFA, find a way to afford these guys. You know, go approach a sponsor or something and say, hey, you know, this is a match made in heaven to bring Pitso back, or this one as a coach, you can be the official sponsor to this move. You know, there's ways. You know, you need to be inventive.
Of course.
You go to the government and you say, guys, like, we want to go to the World Cup. We want to, there are ways. But anyway, Benny is an interesting one because we just had an interview with him. Rob Delport interviewed him in Hiddeski Times last week. And the way he was sounding, it was like, you know, there's if there's a phone call, I'm going to listen. You know what I
Interesting.
mean?
Please
Yeah,
expand
so
more on the interview. What was, was this just to find out what life was like in Manchester? How his role is at the first team, and yeah, please talk more about it. This sounds like a great get for the publication.
yeah, just look, Robbie's a very close friend of Benny. Obviously, also spent a lot of time with him when he was coach of Cape Town City as well. So basically, it was like a catch up. What's how's things been going? And I think he working under Ten Hag has been a real eye opener for him, in a sense of this is the first time he's working and having a mentor in this managerial space. Because previously, okay, he had a short stint in Belgium with Saint-Truiden Nice, and then he came to South Africa and he was the head coach immediately. And when you're the head coach, you're the boss. Nobody can tell me anything. But now you fail, you succeed, you fail, you succeed, you fail, and now you're going to the highest level. I mean, come on, guys, this is pinnacle stuff for a guy to come out of Hanover Park and things like that. So obviously he worked under great managers over his playing career, but now the attention to detail being on the training pitch with that level is just something that obviously he's picked up a lot in, not just from a coaching perspective, but from managing big personalities, and just seeing how day-to-day things occur at the elite level. So what he said was interesting. He says he wants to manage Bafana, like straight up, he wants to manage South Africa. We all know that he was in talks with SAFA before Prowse was appointed. I'm not too sure what happened there. I think so at the time he wanted to bring, his entire technical team as well, which was off the table. But he also said something interesting. He's like, I don't want to manage Bafana Bafana when I'm 71. I want it when I'm fresh, when I'm excited, when I'm ambitious, when I have energy, when I want to fight, when I'm still excited about, about life, when I have that drive for success.
Firing a broadside at an old European coach currently at the helm.
Yeah, so
Living
he literally said, I don't want to be old like Brewers when I'm the coach of Bafana.
There we
That's what he
go.
said. Yeah, that's what he said. So it's interesting, but and I think like, Benny, there was this media perception of him and also like Sheikh Mashaba to say, oh, this guy's unpatriotic. He cares more about these European clubs. He's rejecting call-ups, but nobody knows what actually happened there. Benny is very patriotic. And like, let's just make the comparison to Motsepe. He doesn't take a salary from CAF. He doesn't give himself bonuses. He's rich enough, let's be honest. Maybe there's a certain aspect of Benny that could be the same. You know what I mean? Where you would say, I would take a smaller salary in order to incorporate this one in my technical staff. I'll even take Hellman now because I'm more experienced than I was when I initially wanted the job 3 years ago. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of things at points, but can you control Benny? You know what I mean? Benny is well, now that we've experienced Bruce, I mean, I think
Well,
that
I was gonna go, you couldn't quite control Bruce. Bruce said
exactly,
everyone.
exactly. Exactly. So we there wouldn't be much shock to our system when we hear Benny firing in the press conferences. But I mean, it would be really a sponsorship dream, like to get Benny. I think sponsors would flock back to Bafana Bafana because you have a genuine superstar leading the national team. And people shouldn't discount how important it is to have a popular manager. Like the media is there all the time. More stories are being written, more interest in the national team, more press conferences being viewed. The buzz around a national team or a club when you have a popular manager is there's nothing like it. You know what I mean? So I think it would be a very interesting choice as the successor of Brewers.
Well, listen, Lawrence, that was fantastic insight on South Africa. I could stay here for another 10 minutes talking about this, but we are an African football podcast. If you think Benny should be the next Bafana Bafana coach, should Hugo Bruce leave, let us know. Hit us up on our social media accounts at OTW underscore podcast on X and Instagram. or you just search for the On the Whistle podcast in YouTube and Facebook, and we'll come up. Just be wary. Don't do On the Whistle, because you're going to get the Gunners podcast, which is purely associated with Arsenal fans and how they react post-game. It's entertaining, but
I've
it ain't
been
all.
I've been away for a long time. The professionalism of the production these days is on another level. You even know where things can go wrong.
Exactly, my friend. Exactly. We'll stay with the coaches just for one more question. But
yeah,
in Cameroon, we all know the legend that is Rigobert Song. He is no longer the head coach of Cameroon. The Cameroonian Football Federation deciding not to renew his contract, ending his 2-year spell in charge. The highlight probably of that spell was the victory over Brazil in the Qatar World Cup, even though the Indomitable Lions did not get out the group stages. Where to next for the Indomitable Lions, in your view, Lawrence, and you know, any perspective on Song and his legacy?
Yeah, I'm scared to talk. I know so much stuff that it's like, hey, who's gonna end up seeing this? You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, I spoke to somebody that really knows the ins and outs of Cameroon football right now. And it's not just anybody, it's like somebody who's very high up in there, and he says that some of the issues of Cameroon is actually the president.
Mr. Samuel Eto'o, the legend,
Yes,
man who's
yes,
out
yes,
the
yes.
helm, the man who
He's
appointed Rigobert Song, his former teammate.
yes, but this is very political as well, because Rigobert Song had quite influence in the executive committee of Cameroonian football. So he was integral in Eto'o actually being elected as president. But regardless of that, Eto'o is so passionate. He's a born winner. I mean, you don't achieve what he achieved in his career without, being special. But because of that, he's too hands-on as a president. Like trying to be involved in selection process of the national team, tactics, being at the training ground. It's a bit too, but I think maybe that happened because he didn't trust the coach. You know what I mean? As much as he wanted Rigobert to succeed, as much as he gave him time, because I think he should have been sacked a long time ago. Because not only weren't they getting the results, but they were generally underwhelming in their performances as well. And just like in his press conferences, he didn't really inspire confidence at AFCON. He was like saying things like, "I'm not a coach, I'm a manager," and it's like, what? And Sebastian Minne was actually taking the training sessions, because I remember they played Namibia here where they lost in the AFCON qualifiers. And I noticed that the assistant coach was doing all the sessions and the drills and things like that. But yeah, he had to go. His record was poor, like for a team of Cameroon standard. And it will also be interesting to see who they go to next, because Eto'o has been a big advocate of, let's not go the European route. Let's stick to local. He likes the Alius, says the Belmadis, these young local coaches. And obviously seeing MSFI winning the AFCON is gonna be like, hey, maybe we should get another local coach in. But who's qualified enough? Who's showing potential to take that job now? And he might even be tempted to go now for an experienced coach, even if the guy's European, because you want to get out of this mess and you don't want to taint your legacy with a poor, a poor, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but a poor stay in office. If that makes
Of course,
sense.
makes complete sense.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of politics around there. I think there's another election coming up soon, so he needs to get things right very soon, because obviously there's the AFCON and the FIFA World Cup qualifiers around the corner.
Sure. Well, listen, it sounds like there's a lot still to be worked through in Cameroon behind the scenes. And hopefully the next manager slash coach can get the Indomitable Lions roaring again. We obviously want them to be a force. It's an expanded World Cup in the United States, Canada, and Mexico, and a great chance for African teams to get more of a say and more potential to make the knockout rounds. If we can just change the lens now, Lawrence, to look a little bit at the CAF Champions League. We know that the quarterfinalists are known. Of the eight teams that have punched their tickets to the next round, we have five former winners in Al Ahly, TP Mazembe, Esperance, ASEC Mimosas, and Mamelodi Sundowns in there. Angola's Petro Luanda, who topped their group, also qualify. And two teams from Tanzania, Simba and Young Africans, which is absolutely brilliant and speaks volumes of their football. I guess let's take a step back first and look at who's made the knockouts. There's a real sense of familiarity to it. From your perspective, who would be the favorites, Lawrence? Who would be the teams you'd be saying are going to go on and win it? Is it a case of Al Ahly, the reigning champions, and Mamelodi Sundowns, the African Football League champs, the inaugural winners of that competition?
Yeah, I don't think you should look any further because of the teams that have consistently been impressing in the Champions League over the past. Okay, Al Ahly for as long as I've been living, but Sundowns the last 5 6 years. Okay, they've only reached the semi-final once in the period since winning it in 2016.
Yeah,
But I
2016.
mean, but their football stop, especially on the continent, home away doesn't really matter. I think Sundowns have built a squad that's ready. They are ready to take this Champions League. And also obviously having won the AFL, there's a desire and there's a hunger to, because people can say what about the money or whatever, but the prestige of the Champions League is just on another level. So I think obviously those are the two favorites. It would be a dream to see them in the final. I think it would be an amazing spectacle for the continent. Two of the best teams. Good football. It would be a great advertisement for the continent. I think the outsiders, my outsiders would be Petro. Very interesting squad. They've not conceded a single goal in the group stages. That's
Unbelievably topping their group, right? Or was that just a surprise to me?
no. They've been a good team as well. And I remember in 2020, they knocked Sundowns out of the quarterfinals. So it's a good team. They've had it's consistency with their coach. Alex Santos has been there for a couple of seasons now. And what is interesting about the teams that can genuinely compete for the title is that they don't lose their best players and they improve their squad, which Sundowns is doing, Al Ahly is doing, and to an extent, Petro is starting to do that as well. So I think maybe winning the Champions League is a bridge too far, but I think they could, spring some surprises. Maybe semi-final or even final.
That'd be
Depending on
brilliant.
the
That'd be brilliant
depending depending on
for
the luck of the draw. So
football.
if they get Sundowns, I think they're out. Because Sundowns, yeah, they've got bad blood there. It was a very painful exit against Petro that they probably want to avenge.
Well, again, they're fantastic. I think as we round up the pod, my last question is going to bend to you is
I
we've
think
seen.
you asked something about Tanzania as
Well,
well.
that's exactly where I was going to go. I mean, like,
Okay.
Tanzanian football in the most recent years has done phenomenally well. Ali, Alistair Howarth, our multi-platform reporter slash broadcaster, often talks about the investment in the league, the commercial sponsors, and now you have Simba and Yanga both in the last eight, not last 16, the last eight. I mean, from your perspective, that is brilliant for African football, isn't it, to have those teams really going into the knockouts, particularly because they're in big markets.
Okay, Ali is from Kenya, so he has this different perspective of
Sure.
East Africa
Sure.
than I do. But roundabout when I got really into, covering African football, Simba and Yanga were the ones that really popped onto my radar. And I started researching them a lot, watching them, and I was like, who are these clubs and why are they doing so well in continental football? And then I had an opportunity to visit Dar es Salaam and watch Simba, and I just saw the professionalism of the two clubs from an administrative level, marketing level, and like you said, with the sponsorships and the broadcasting, I just thought, okay, this is something that could even catch up to the PSL very quickly. And I've seen, smaller clubs in Tanzanian football also now, investing your Azams, your Singidas, and things like that. So it's important not to, just have these two massive clubs and then the rest are all just like, is what it is. But yeah, they've been doing very well and consistent in African football. They're taking it very seriously as well. And they've got the support. That's I think that's one of the biggest positives about them is that they pack stadiums. What other teams in West Africa can and East Africa can say, we pack stadiums like they do. But I just think, we saw some unsavory scenes with Simba against Chuaning over the weekend, and I think they just need to eradicate that part of the game, like the controversies off the pitch. I think their teams are good enough, their talent identification is good, they hire the right coaches, they seem to be getting the right players, so there's a lot of positives about them, and if they can eradicate, that. They will always deny this or deny that, but it can't constantly happen and you say it's not your fault. Why is it always the visiting teams have issues at the Benjamin Mkapa Stadium in the Champions League and the Confederations Cup? So yeah, I think if they can just, eradicate that out of the game, they'll be one of the giants of African football in like maybe 10 years to come, based on this trajectory that they're on. Because, like I said, they keep improving. And the more experience you gain at this level, the more you belong. You know what I mean? TP Mazembe, they gradually were building, and they won five titles eventually. They've fallen off the radar a little bit, but if Yanga and Simba can keep pushing, keep constantly being in the quarterfinals, and eventually, something's gonna give. And I think it's also becoming more attractive to go to Tanzania. I mean, Simba is like a Moroccan goalkeeper. They've got some of the best talents from West Africa. Yanga even signed a South African player, and I'm sure that they're targeting a couple of more South Africans in the next few windows. So yeah, it's very interesting projects to have a look at from the outside. I'm not, too invested watching the domestic league and things like that, but from the outside watching them in continental football, it's been good. Yanga also play a very good brand of football, and they beat Belouizdad, I think 4-0. That was a crazy result. Simba is chucking Widado. So yeah, not only that there's two Tanzanian teams, but the fact that there's only two North African teams in the quarterfinals says a
Yeah.
lot. It's an interesting
Tell me about
season.
the changing of the guard with sub-Saharan African teams now, in the sense of this season at least.
It's like the change of guard of North African dominance at AFCON.
Yeah, absolutely.
When Morocco hosted next year, I don't think we're gonna have the same thing. We're gonna be back to default settings there.
Sure. Well, listen, March the 12th is when we'll see the quarterfinal draw for the CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederation Cup. It'll take place in Cairo. So the Confederations Cup will be at 2 p.m. Cairo time, followed by the Champions League draw, which will be at 3 p.m. Cairo time. So we look forward to that. Lawrence, as always, what a pleasure having you on the pod, a real treat. Hopefully we'll have you on soon again, if not meeting you in person. Good luck with everything you've got. I know you've got a busy day today, going to watch one of the Soweto Giants. So hopefully that all goes well.
Yeah, going to Mpumalanga for Sundowns tomorrow. Thursday, Soweto Derby press conference. Saturday, Soweto Derby. So it's a jam-packed week.
Well, really quickly, do you want to give us your prediction for the Soweto
Oh, Chiefs haven't scored since AFCON break
derby?
ended, so they'll probably win. Yeah, because
Go on. Kevin, Coach Kevin, still there?
It's
Come
such a
on,
weird
Kevin.
situation. It's such a weird situation that they'll be in a terrible form and then they beat Pirates. It's I don't know how it works, but I think that Pirates will win 2-0, I think.
Oh, there we go. There we go. We wait to watch whether the Sea Robbers will beat the Amakhosi. Thank you, Lawrence. All the best, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks, man. Great to be on the show again.